All right, everyone. Welcome on this Thursday evening. If you've been watching the show, then it's always on a Thursday evening, I guess. This is your host, Big John, right here on Free For All, the libertarian-themed talk show on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. Check us out on all our platforms, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X, Getter, anywhere basically you can throw up a podcast, you can find this show there. All right, grumblingsmedia.com, bookmark it. Make sure you visit us on occasion, at least. Okay, I already said who I am. I'm Big John, but I also have to introduce my friend and co-host, Mr. Hody Johns. Hode man, how you doing tonight?
Hey, doing really well. You know, if you get to introduce yourself twice, it's only fair that I do the same.
So you please said do, Johns. Please do.
I'm Hody Johns. I'm doing really great. No, I'm very excited for this episode because just you and me, I feel like we get to do like a true free-for-all when it's that way, discuss a bunch of stuff that's in the news. And I like that you get all your big stories out of the way with Mike Dermott on the Liberty Lens. That way we get to discuss like kind of the less discussed stories.
Yeah, and, you know.
We got a good lineup this week.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of funny. I didn't really think about it the way you just formulated the there, Hody, but I guess you're right because, you know, with Mike on Liberty Lens, thank you for the plug, you know, we do a deep dive on just one issue for like almost an hour every time, and that has been working out nicely in terms of a format. But on this one, we have the live audience, which we do not have on Liberty Lens, and which we love, by the way. Shout out to all our listeners, viewers. If you're watching us live at this moment, please feel free to reach out to us during the show. Throw us up a comment on YouTube, Rumble, X, or Facebook. We'll see it right here in the studio software, and we'll pop it up on the screen. We love engaging with our fans, our followers, or our haters, whichever one, Hody. It's okay. We'll take them all during the show. That's fine. All right, to your point, let's get right down to it. Let's talk about some issues of interest to liberty lovers everywhere. So let's start out with the first one. This episode may have a little bit of a financial slant to it, Hody. First thing I want to talk about is proposed federal cryptocurrency regulations right here in the U.S. Now, some people might argue, Hody, that I just uttered an oxymoronic phrase just now. Federal regulation of cryptocurrency. Tell me, or rather, tell the folks, why is what I just said oxymoronic?
Well, cryptocurrency was always designed as a non-centralized market alternative, truly free market. There's a limit of, I believe, 21 million Bitcoin. Each crypto works a little bit differently, but essentially it's not managed. It is not there for somebody to say, hey, let's do this with it, let's do that with it. It's just out there in the wild. Most of these are mined in code that's just on the internet. So it is the way that these work is specifically lacking central authority, including authority by the people who designed it. So not just government authority, but right, by the people who designed it. Now, of course, every cryptocurrency works a little differently. Unfortunately, people that do have centralized forces, we've seen the rug pull happen. Everybody remembers the Hawk to a Girl, right?
And right, then right.
We've had several scams that deal with crypto because it's centrally regulated. They're able to manipulate it and take away from it. And I think that this is we're going to get into this week because Trump is establishing a new crypto task force. We kind of want to talk about what that means, what's going to happen,
right?
You know, because as you mentioned, having a task force that's government oriented doesn't really jive with cryptocurrency all that much as far as what we
right,
know
right
to be.
And in what is clearly a case of where even someone who is not a fan of the president's, like myself, I have to give him his props where he deserves them. And in this case, he's done a fine job of saying, hey, I love crypto. Crypto is the best. We're going to have the best crypto in the world right here, U.S. crypto, you know, like the whole thing. So he's in his usual bombastic fashion, he's hyped up the crypto. And I'm afraid that people who don't understand cryptocurrencies think that this is just, hey, if Trump is promoting this, if he's cheerleading it, he must be doing it the right way. He's a great marketer. He must be doing this the right way. And it really, you have to take a step back, right? Because Look, I held off investing in Bitcoin because it violated, for me, Peter Lynch's rule of investing, Hody. I don't know if you're familiar with Peter Lynch and what his number one rule of investing was, but Peter Lynch was a famous mutual fund manager. Famously, he was the head of the Fidelity Magellan Fund back in the mid to late 70s. And he averaged something like 30% returns a year. He was one of these great, legendary, often overlooked, I think, money managers. And his number one rule of investing is, if you don't understand it, don't invest in it. And his corollary, if you can't explain what a business does in one paragraph, it's not a good business, right? So following that rule, and even as steeped in technology as I was back then, I said, I really don't understand how this works. Not the actual moving of bits around, but what's the goal here? And it took me a while to understand all cryptos are different, to your point. All of them have different functions because they're not necessarily acting as currency per se, but just smart contracts, right? They exist on something called the blockchain. And what's, despite the name cryptocurrency, which comes from the Greek word to be hidden, so it's not hidden currency in that the transaction is hidden. The hidden is the transaction itself, Hody, right? Super transparent. You see the transaction happening. It's public. But what you don't see is who's on either end of it, right? And that's where the crypto piece comes into it. Tell me, why do libertarians love cryptocurrencies, Cody?
The inability for it to be traced is fantastic because we can purchase things and not have the government all in our business. You know, if I want to buy anything from marijuana to a prostitute, I can deal transaction in cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin. Like I said, I do want to establish that some crypto coins are better and worse at this. So please do your research before getting super involved.
Right, and we can break down those categories, Hody. But for libertarians, you just hit on it, right? It's the, like, I don't need government to manage my financial affairs, okay?
Yes.
Now, there's pros and cons to this, right? Let's be honest, that a populace that has been weaned and raised on fiat currencies that are operated, regulated, and the sole property of the federal government, all of a sudden, crypto takes on risks, minefields, you know, whatever you want to call it, that most people have not typically been familiar with or had experience in. For example, when all of us, despite, you know, what the loss of the value of the purchasing power of the dollar, most of us say, I have a dollar, it's still a dollar tomorrow in my pocket. Whereas Bitcoin, we see that its value in terms of dollars will fluctuate wildly, right? So if you were to look at this as sort of an FX exchange, cryptocurrency especially, even the more stable ones, Bitcoin being the most famous of those, also the most stable, I would say. Ethereum is another one. These things are deflationary, which means there's only a fixed amount of them, right? Think of them. Think of Bitcoin like gold, right? Nobody's making more gold. Whatever you find in the earth is what you find. So Bitcoin has a fixed number of Bitcoins, Hody, which means they're deflationary. Do you want to tell the folks, what's deflationary mean in this case?
Sure. So that means there's the fixed. So something that inflates is like a balloon. I can pump more into it, right? And any time if somebody could just say, oh, I'm just going to add a bunch more Bitcoin, then it's inflationary. I can just add a bunch more. The U.S. dollar is inflationary. Famously, we're going through a lot of that right now. So everybody knows what that means. We're pumping a lot of paper dollars in, which brings the value of them down. If something is deflationary, it is either, well, it could actually be being deleted. That's modern monetary theory. We won't get into that into this episode.
No, we won't.
But something that is like stagnant, it's not going to inflate that balloon. Whatever's in the balloon is what's always going to be in the balloon.
Right.
And that means that the value Well, it can go down in the eyes of the of prospective people. It would never go down because of supply issues, right? That we will never pump too much into it, and therefore what you have will be worth less. This is why very, very, very wealthy people have liked to own some of this, because it's a cash asset in the sense that it is money. They can spend it like money. They can do transactions like money. And yet, we already covered earlier, it's not traceable, so they can have private cash transaction with this. And part two of this is that they know that it's secure. They don't have to feel, you know, dollar bills, if it's in your pillowcase, the dollars are going down because things are inflating. If you have crypto coin in your pillowcase or wallet or whatever it may be, the value is actually going to increase because there's, or at least increase in the eyes of people that look at it from a supply perspective. The only way it really goes down is if, like, economics in general is looking bad. But it's never going to go down because of an inflationary reason. So you don't have to have that fear that you have with regular dollars of being like, I'm sitting on $10,000, which, you know, next month is going to be the equivalent of $9,000, you know?
Right. But the fear of something like cryptos, as we've all seen, is that in relation to other world currencies, they can fluctuate wildly. Yes. So, you know, right? And again, Bitcoin, I view it like, I really simplified my case to myself for understanding it enough to buy it when I just said it's digital gold, meaning I view it as a hard asset, not as a currency. I view it as a hard asset like gold, silver, or platinum. And I think a lot of people have started to maybe look at it that way. Maybe I'm wrong in my perception, but that's the way I view it. Yeah. But anyway, okay, so that's sort of what crypto means. And now we have various different types of cryptos, right? And but for purposes of what, because I don't want to get ahead of the second topic, but for right now, in terms of federal regulation, the main concern here is that there are these proposals. You have the one that Gillibrand co-authored, and I'm looking at my notes because I want to get the name right, Hody. It's the Loomis Gillibrand Payment Stablecoins Act, where they want to take crypto that is considered a stablecoin, meaning it's tied into some fiat currency, like U.S. what's it, USDC, United States dollar crypto, whatever it is.
Yeah,
and they want you to treat it as if it was fiat currencies. You got to know your customer laws, which means that it's beholden on the institutions that manage your digital wallets. If you have a centralized wallet, to say, oh, that sort of transparent that opaqueness rather has to become transparent, meaning the wallet has to know who I am, and that has to be made public or accessible to the government, and also who I'm dealing with. And they have a bounce, like $800 per transaction or $1,000 per month or, whatever those actual detailed limits are, but they're not that difficult to surpass. Oh, and they also gave themselves the loophole of or anything that looks suspicious. So these know your customer requirements are really what's sort of sticking in the craw of libertarians. Is it that, like, okay, you have this crypto, and now you're demanding that we turn over to the government or make the government privy to what makes crypto so attractive, especially to libertarians, right?
Yeah, I want to give Trump some due. I believe it was 6 days ago, and he just signed it into law recently. Overturned a Biden rule that was done at the end of 2024. It would have taken place started 2026. That would have made it so that everybody who deals in crypto essentially has to be considered like a broker. And for tax purposes, this means that you're going to get like a 1099 form. It's going to be reported that way. And that's even if you're just dealing with decentralized crypto exchanges, whether we're talking stock exchanges, whether we're talking purchasing them, making a transaction, whatever it may be. And so I want to say that I think, or at least I hope, Trump's heart is in the right place on this, because this was a pretty big deal, right? That we're undoing something. And now, thankfully, because of this signature, it's never going to happen, or at least won't happen for now, but, you know, at least what was going to happen in 2026, and everybody is now going to all of a sudden have to pay your taxes on it, pay sales taxes, whatever they may be, is not going to happen anymore. So big kudos to him there. But everything you just said absolutely remains a problem. Trump is establishing a crypto task force. I'm going to just quote from them, if I may, what they say their task force aims to do. And that is create a sensible regulatory path for digital assets that respects the bounds of the law, and to draw clear regulatory lines, provide realistic paths to registration, craft sensible disclosure frameworks, and deploy enforcement resources judiciously. All bad. This is all bad. We don't want this to be regulated. The beauty of it is it's not regulated. When they say they want to provide realistic paths to registration, no, I don't want to have to register my currency with the government. I don't want to have to say, hey, there's 21 billion Bitcoins, Mr. Government, will you certify that there's 21 or a million Bitcoins out there? We may say that we like disclosure frameworks, and sure, you should probably know what you're getting involved in like a free market, but I don't want the government telling me what a sensible disclosure is. We've been doing those for a long time, and they always manage to still somehow rip people off and have a ton of fine print while also managing to mislead people. And then the last part here, we want to deploy enforcement resources judiciously. I don't want this enforced. I don't want the judicial system to have anything to do with this, right? Like, have the strength of the currency be the currency itself, not the people who try to regulate it, the governments who say it's okay, who give it their approval or anything like that. Even if I trust Trump, who, as I said, I think his heart may be in the right place on this issue with him signing that recent law. Right. Don't you think that a Democrat who does not like cryptocurrency, say Joe Biden, is going to get the power to do everything I just said with cryptocurrency and shut it down or rein it in or make it useless? They're taking away what makes cryptocurrency really special for libertarians. Would just be kind of another U.S. dollar. Go ahead.
So let me throw something at you, right? I'll play devil's advocate. I'll play non-libertarian status advocate right now, right?
Yeah.
But Hody, don't people need to be protected from fraudsters? Don't we need to be protected from the Hoctuas of the world? What about the rug pulls? What about the S coins? And I don't mean stable coins. What's wrong with giving us a little protection for that? Giving the average consumer protection from that? Like, what's wrong? What's wrong with having a little regulation when it comes to saving people's nest eggs if they're in crypto?
My answer to this is pretty simple. There's nothing wrong with any of that. I just don't trust the government to do it. You look at the biggest polluters on Earth that are given the license to pollute, and they're all either government or deeply entrenched and paid to for the government. The people who fail these audits or fail to whatever, they failed to pay their fees to their politicians, and therefore we're taking away, even though they're a much greener company than this other one, we're not going to let them play ball because we're just going to have the EPA fail them, right? This is a perverse incentive system. Keep in mind that these politicians want the US dollar to be strong. They don't want competition. This is like asking Ford, hey, what's like, we trust you to help regulate other cars. I don't want Ford to regulate. That's a perverse incentive, right? So politicians have a perverse incentive in this. I completely agree that there are people that get scammed and that's bad, right? Like, I don't want to make libertarianism sound like some kind of total utopia. In fact, I think we as libertarians need to be on the forefront of these cultural issues, telling people, hey guys, this is a bad crypto scam. Like, libertarians unfortunately kind of tend towards the side of all crypto is good. And we need to be honest with people when we say, like, hey, like, much like we love our gun rights, but handling a gun is so important, right? Knowing how to handle it well, trigger discipline,
right?
When and where to fire, when it's appropriate, what your different stances are, what your different weaponry is. Like, we want to make sure people understand all these things, but we need to do that on the market. We really don't want the government up in on this. I'll just finish with one final point on this, like, just to kind of emphasize how little I trust them. This whole bit is going to get started by the feds are going to create are going to have Bitcoin as part of the treasury now. Well, we say, well, how can they do that without farming it? And they tell you in the opening paragraph of their document, we will be seizing assets from people that we've arrested, and through civil asset forfeiture, we will be taking their cryptocurrency and giving it to ourselves. They're just fleecing it off of people.
Isn't that convenient? Isn't that convenient? By the way, Ross Ulbricht has been pardoned. Mm-hmm. His crypto was never returned to him.
Yep.
That's still in the coffers of the U.S. Treasury.
Yep. For those who read American Kingpin, I highly recommend it. Great book about Ross Ulbricht and everything going on there, as well as a deep dive into the investigation into him. There were actually multiple officers who stole from themselves, giving Bitcoin to themselves as part of this investigation. They got caught. They got fired as well, but it was an interesting like backstab of like, oh, like we seized this Bitcoin and we're going to take that as well.
Yeah.
So it's a,
And that's actually, look, that's the other, I mean, I liken it to this. Like if you watch some of these documentaries, like I think it was the 75th Precinct. There was a great documentary on the New York police and the graft and the corruption. We all know about Serpico, like literally, they became partners with the drug trade that they were supposed to, you know, put an end to in police. Your opinion of the drug wars notwithstanding, I'm saying given that they were cops tasked with this in the public trust, they were thieves. They were partnering with the criminals and ripping them off. So it's in the nature of regulatory agencies and the government to do what you just described, Cody. So you're absolutely right. The second thing is, because I could almost hear some people objecting and saying, like, well, isn't crypto really stock and trade for criminals? Is like, all right, Ross got off, you know, Trump pardoned him, blah, blah, blah. But let's face it, aren't like unlike drug dealers doing this? What about pimps and prostitution and contract killers and all the other crazy stories you hear of? Well, that might be the case. But here's something else I would draw a comparison to. Do those cases motivate you enough to say, I'm willing not to have my phone encrypted, I'm willing not to have my messages encrypted, because somebody may have evil intent with it, with that same privacy, right? So all of us, I think, understand the concept of, nah, man, my texts are my own. I don't need the government snooping through my emails. I don't need the government snooping through my texts, and I don't care. And good for you, Apple, for refusing, at least initially, to help backdoor, you know, iPhones for the government. And I think most of us, libertarians, yes, but I'm saying non-libertarians, most of us are at least sympathetic to that argument that you don't necessarily have to be a criminal. Like the old, like, if you're not guilty, why do you take the Fifth? Right? Like that old thing, which ironically Trump himself has said until he took the stand. Then he said, okay, now I understand why the Fifth is there, right? So, you know, like you don't have to be a criminal to appreciate that. Like maybe my transaction, maybe they're not illegal. Maybe they're just embarrassing. I don't want people to know about my fetishes. I don't want people to know about my daily movements. I don't want people to know what I do in my spare time. I mean, I'm notorious. I talk a lot here. But, you know, ask my producer here, William, when he tries to get information out of me, what I'm doing at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Nobody ever knows, right? Because I it's still hard for me to start letting out information that I choose not to let out, right? Cody, I'm sure you're the same way. And it's like people should take that mentality and apply it to crypto. So when you're trying to look for all the great points you just mentioned, this is why we don't want to have government involved in the regulation of crypto. Just think on a very personal scale, liken it to your privacy when it comes to your emails, your text messages, your phone calls, that at best, what you would hope for is that for each individual violation of your privacy, at least there was a court order, at least there was a warrant issued. I mean, that's the lowest level we can hope for, you know, the most basic, I should say. That's why we hate the Patriot Act. That's why we hate it, like the CIA turning its gaze inward on its own citizens. So not to beat that horse to death, but I think if you wrap it all up in that sort of thing, Hody, plus, like I said, Bitcoin is like gold to me. Nobody knows where my gold is buried. Well, I've got gold bars buried somewhere. Government doesn't need to know where they are, Hody. Same thing with my crypto. To the extent possible, I don't want to know. The government shouldn't know where they are. All right.
Yep.
The next one, you picked out this topic for us to talk to, about tonight. So why don't I let you kick it off? There's a potentially a pilot launch for a central bank digital currency in this country. Tell us a little bit about that and why it would be of interest to us libertarians.
Yeah, I got into a little bit of how they're going to get started. Unfortunately, spoiler alert on that one. I don't really love it. I've also kind of talked about their goals and ideals a little bit. It's hard. These first two were so closely related.
Yes,
so
I did
a few spoilers there. But essentially, this is going to be they're also going to work on doing their own digital currency. So leaving all that in the past, what Bitcoin, Ethereum, and all that is, this is going to be a cryptocurrency that is created by the government, right? That is issued and controlled by the Fed. The issue here is that they're going to be able to track your transactions. So it's a little bit different from other cryptocurrencies. You're going to pay taxes on them, again, unlike other different cryptocurrencies. But I guess the flip side of this is that it's like, hey, it's another alternative to the dollar, and this one is much more modern. Listen, the dollar is a fiat currency anyway, right? It's not based on anything. So might as well have something that is online, an online type of currency that actually works for them. I have many criticisms about that as far as, unfortunately, there's more comparisons than contrasts with the US dollar. But watching the Fed dip its toe into this and seeing what they plan to do, if even if it's just as bad as the US dollar, well, then they trash two currencies, but, you know, what harm can really be done? I'm sure you have some ideas there as well. But, you know, at least it's something that America can try out. And, hey, if I'm already using cryptocurrency and they want to crash the dollar, that's more money for my Bitcoin. So good job.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of it's almost like I'm sitting here wondering to myself, like, did they already do it without us really noticing? I mean, when you think about it, the various forms of electronic payment that we have that are still based on the U.S. dollar, right? So when you think about PayPal, Venmo, Cash App, all these things, right? Essentially, they are cashless representations of the dollar. Your online banking doesn't even have to be a crazy app. Just go to your favorite Chase, Citibank, Bank of America, whatever. Go to their online app, their online banking. You get the same effect, right? You identify someone, and now they don't even have to be customers of the same bank, right? I think if you use so I'm a Chase banker, full disclosure, I was a vice president of Chase for 15 years, and I actually helped develop their online banking system 25 years ago, right? So now, back then, you could only send payments to people who were other Chase customers. Like, that was its scope. Now, Hody, if you're not a Chase customer, let's for the sake of argument say you are part of the system and you're part of a bank, I don't know, say Bank of America or whatever, TD Bank, whatever. I don't have to be, our banks do not have to be the same one. You could just, as a Chase customer, I could say, oh, here's Hody's cell phone number, send him a payment, send him $10 for lunch the other day or whatever, right? And they will do that. Of course, it's tracked. It's, you know, it's reported if it's over a certain amount. You see it on your bank statement. In one of the few positives of the thing, they ensure the payment at no cost to me, right? If for whatever reason it never reaches you or gets muddled up or the wrong, you know, it's insured, right, as a payment. So in some way, I think we already functionally kind of have this CBDC, don't you think? It's like, because I almost refuse to believe this is going to be a pure crypto, right? I have a feeling it's going to be some sort of stable coin that's pegged to the dollar. I didn't see that detail or not, but don't you get the feeling that's the way they would have to construct it for this to be in line with what they want to accomplish?
Right. I mean, already when we had introduced this topic at the top of the show, we just say, oh, what are some of the advantages of crypto? It's decentralized. It's non-inflationary. It's not trackable. This is none of those things, right? Like, this is, and so what, like, when you say, well, what's the difference between this and the US dollar? You know, it's kind of hard to tell. Now, there are certain countries like China and Canada that have done this type of thing before, where they call it full-on crypto or electronic currency or whatever. And unfortunately, they've kind of showed the problem with government controlling this stuff. They freeze accounts. They can surveil it much better than even just average dollars. So unfortunately, it's got less privacy than just a dollar bill. And so there's been some issues when we talk about government controlling this stuff. And it's just, but I mean, they freeze bank accounts today. So yeah, they'll freeze your right. e-account instead of freeing your bank, your Chase account or whatever. But what, you know, to me, what's the difference, right? Like, I'm just over here just trying to spend some money and just be, you know, for normal things. So to me, the idea of the government creating this CBDC, listen, I dump on Trump for a lot of things. I guess I want to see the full unveiling. I want to get a look at it before I trash the thing. You know, it's like when I hear about a new car that's being designed, I'm skeptical about a lot of it. But maybe I should hold the majority of my criticism until I see the full unveiling, see the specs, see how it's supposed to perform before I have an idea about it. What I know about it already, I'm not sold on anytime the government wants to pretend to do a free market thing. Oh, you free marketers really like this. Well, what if we try that? Like, you free marketers really love retirement. Can we try? And that's been Social Security, the greatest right. Ponzi scheme in human history.
So, yes, absolutely.
Whoopsie daisies.
Yeah. So that's what's interesting about this. And certainly if there's any of our viewers out there or listeners that have any opinions on this, if Hody and I are missing something, please feel free to hit us up in the chat, hit us up with a comment or two, and we'll be more than happy to talk about it. But to me, again, I think it's functional. I think it's just – now, I will admit, as a former banker, there might be operational efficiencies to having a CBDC. It's in line with a lot of other major economies. Most of our GDP is intertwined with the rest of the world, despite what President Trump and his tariffs seem to say about it. So are there operational efficiencies that can be gleaned from this? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But again, it's an operational efficiency within a system that most of us wish didn't exist, right? So meaning us libertarians. So, like, you know, it's not to say that you wouldn't have a more efficient monetary exchange with this CBDC, just like it's much more efficient at the exchange houses when everything gets settled electronically on a net basis at the end of 24 hours, right? It's like, okay, it's a clearinghouse. Everything settles today and it's all electronic. Not like the old days when, you know, if I bought the Swedish kroner and sold you Japanese yen, somewhere somebody had to actually send that currency in the amount that we traded back and forth between our offices, right? So it is more efficient. There is an economy of scale. But yeah, I think it's I don't think it's headed anywhere particularly good, Hody.
I think you're on the mark. I mean, you're bringing up a lot of good points, because when we look at the top cryptocurrency transactions, you're looking at expensive electronics, properties, luxuries, cars, you know, kind of big transactions that people are like, okay, I'll take a Bitcoin or two for this thing to avoid, usually, let's be honest, paying taxes, right? You know, reporting and stuff like that. I think the top personal item that people buy with cryptocurrency is medicine. Medicine that's usually illegal in our, you know, in our country. But we want, you know, let's be honest here. I can't really use it for groceries. There are some places who are like, we'll take it for groceries, but you're paying. The thing is we want cryptocurrency to be like on its own. I don't want to have to pay it to somebody and then they convert that to US dollars. And then I'm just paying, basically using US dollars by giving them my really great Bitcoin and turning it into a lesser dollar. And so when we have something like a CBDC, like what you were talking about, being able to pay your groceries with it, being able to pay your mortgage with it, being able to just do common transactions with it, certainly much more convenient than it would be in having like a cryptocurrency that it is, you know, today.
Yeah, and it's interesting. When you said, what do people really use it for? You said medicine. The thing that popped in my mind is online gambling. Okay. A lot of the offshore books will give you a discount for using Bitcoin. and you could conduct your whole transaction in Bitcoin, right? So if I want to bet some Bitcoin on the Super Bowl, you know, I place my bet in Bitcoin. They give me the choice of retrieving it to my wallet if I win or lose, if I win, obviously, or I can have it converted to a dollar, but then they'll also take away a processing fee, a conversion fee. So you're actually out 5% roughly. So Bitcoin, they're encouraging you to use Bitcoin. So a lot of these offshore books do that. And I think that's an interesting use of it because in your case, I'm not converting it to dollars. I don't have to. I can actually bet Bitcoin and win Bitcoin in that case. All right. We have, sorry about that. Magner DeLorne. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. And I'll also take a guess here on the pronoun and say he says, I don't really have many opinions on crypto, so I've just been listening. Hey, that works for us, Magner. It works for us. If you're just listening and you don't have an opinion, that's fair enough. Perhaps we can help you inform you enough to formulate an opinion. So thank you for watching Free for All. And that was old Magner. You think I got it right?
Magner is one of my best friends. That is Aaron Goss. I believe that's just his YouTube account. Goes by Magner.
Okay. So, see, I'm not hip to all you younger Discord libertarians.
Right. The people using the screen names, right? Like, I think I'm the Hoadman or something on YouTube.
Keeping their anonymity. And
Right. I love applying to my professional job with, crypto bro 596969 at hotmail.com. Like that's
right.
Best foot forward, you know.
Absolutely, I see what you're saying, but thanks for watching us there, Magner. Okay, let's move on to our next topic of the evening, and I think this one's a little bit more debated. This next one, so let's throw it out there. The push for UBI, Universal Basic Income, the push for some pilot programs. Let me just read here. The report suggests that some U.S. states or cities are launching UBI pilot programs in 2025, funded by reallocating welfare budgets. These experiments provide regular cash payments to residents aiming to reduce poverty and simplify welfare. So, Cody, pro or anti UBI? From our libertarian circle of influence,
this is a tough one for me because it depends on how it's implemented. I'm going to say pro UBI if they implement it ideally. Now, obviously, I still want a free market. I don't want the government I don't want there to be a central bank for which to have a UBI from. That said, we are obviously in an era. We want to tie money to fruits as much as possible, right? Like using the basic, both capitalists and socialists agree on this one issue, right? We want to tie the currency to your fruit as much as possible. And unfortunately, what's happening as we design things that replace what we've done is we've tied it to labor. I pay you dollars per hour as opposed to actually producing something. So what happens when a car company makes an automated system that used to require thousands and thousands of people? Well, now we just don't need the people anymore. We automate their jobs and that wealth just goes away. That wealth should still exist. It's just in the cars, right? And it should be more for everybody. Instead, it becomes less for everybody, right? We still get the cars, but we're not paying the people as much. So there's actually punishments that come about when we make technological advances because we use a centralized banking system. This is something the capitalists warned the Keynesians about all the time. They were like, this is the problem. And they were like, well, you know, we like war. We like these things. We like sustainable farming, and we're just going to have it, and we're going to pay like this no matter what. UBI is at its best and most successful. If you look at the countries and cities that have experienced the most success with it, they replace whatever their current systems are with UBI. If you look at the ones that are like the biggest failures, and people will do this a lot, they'll point to like Oakland and Los Angeles and California, right? Where these things have just been abject disasters. They're additions. And that's a huge difference here. So I am pro UBI. If it's replacing the central banks, the way we give money, allow me to go on just a brief tangent here. So just to explain to people generally, our treasury prints money. The bulk of that money goes to banks under the form of a loan, right? So the central bank expects it back. The banks then give out that money, and of course they have to pay the central bank back. So they give out the bulk of that money that they got from the central treasury as another loan. So we are constantly having to pay and subsidize these people for every time they pass it forward. By the time it gets to people like you and me, Big John, we owe all the fat cats a ton of money, and we didn't do a darn thing for them. They haven't done a darn thing for us. That's just the way that cash works. When we replace that, and I say, listen, Treasury, every time you print a dollar, you can keep 15% of it. The rest of it just goes to the common people. Right? It goes to normal people. We cut out those banking middlemen every time. And listen, this is a fair way to do things. Why should the banks get it? What service did they provide? At the moment they're receiving those dollars from the Fed, from centralized banking, they haven't done anything. They've done exactly zero services, right? So why not just give it to the normal people? Every time we add a dollar, we're devaluing their currency anyway. So it only makes sense that if we're printing more dollars, that we give people more of their own money that we're borrowing against, right? So when we replace this treasury system and we just say, hey, we'll keep 15%. We're going to give everybody, the common people, 85% of the money we print. That's an ideal way to do UBI. It replaces the treasury. It replaces the welfare system. It replaces taxation even, right? Because they're already keeping the money that we would pay to them in revenue, right? So they're keeping all that and we're getting all this. Perfect, right? Or perfect in a statist society. If you're a minarchist, this is fantastic. And Big John, I'm sure you're going to give some props to one of your favorite minarchists who actually loves the UBI system for this reason. The problem that I have is almost everybody who kicks this around, especially in the United States, is proposing for it to just be another thing the U.S. government spends right. money on. It's not replacing taxes, not replacing the treasury, not replacing welfare systems, it's replacing nothing. And so, unfortunately, the way we implement this is frankly idiotic. It's just another way for government to spend money. They do it poorly. Things don't work. The poor get poorer. I want it to work, and I think it's a shame that it's poorly implemented because it makes it so defending these things makes me look stupid. I just have a different view of what it could be, that kind of Milton Friedman view, as opposed to what it is. So thank you for letting me rant there for a bit. I appreciate it. Okay. I have a lot to say about it, but thankfully I think I got it out of my system.
Yeah, and you're right. So like from a purely anarchist view, UBI is just as bad as any other welfare or state-administered aid program, right? But again, that from the anarchist point of view, which I know you consider yourself one, but I also view you as a humanist, and I understand the conflict that arises in that situation, right? But let's assume that not everybody is aligned with the admittedly very small percentage of true libertarian anarchists in this country, the few ANCAPs that exist, right? To a minarchist, to a classical liberal, to a constitutionalist, like, say, a Ron Paul or something, in this country, where we say, okay, we're not getting rid of government tomorrow. It's just not going to happen, right? So here's at least how we can make something more libertarian, more freedom, within the constraints of we have this thing called the government, right? Now, UBI, Milton Friedman's terminology for it was the negative income tax. Which was, you provide everyone in the country, you get rid of all other forms of welfare, and what you do is you place out with the negative income tax that says, pick a number, whatever the poverty level is. I think at the time he proposed it was $18,000 a year, $15,000, whatever it was. The number almost is a detail that doesn't matter for purposes of the implementation. And you would say, if you're making below that, the government will send you a check that will supplement you to that poverty line. Now, what happens in that case is, as you get closer to the poverty line, obviously the government decreases what it has to send you. And Friedman, along with some other people, like Hayek as well, I think, was in line. He didn't call it a negative income tax, but it was the same thought process. Most people, when given the opportunity to claw their way out of poverty, if you give them that helping hand, they will take it. See, a lot of people think there's income inequality in this country, which there is, but it doesn't mean that there's no income mobility. We have income mobility in this country. People tend to move up and down through income classes. For the wealthy, they tend to move down based on their equity portfolios, right? Like their wealth will fluctuate, usually in the down at some point, because of equities. For what we would call, say, the lower class, the middle class, it's more, to your point, tied into their labor. How much are they earning? How much are they keeping? How much are they taking home? So when you give people the chance to say, I'm going to work, but I just need something to feed my kids so I can go out and work two shifts. I need to feed my kids or pay their medical bills to allow me the ability to work, get some capital on my own, and get ahead in this world. And that's what Friedman was proposing. Now, I'm sure it's offensive to a lot of libertarians who consider themselves anarchists. And you know what? Sorry, I'll just have to take that slur that you might want to hit me with if I say that I am for UBI as a replacement. If we were starting at the no government position, I may or may not be open to UBI. But given the state of where we are now, not only Milton Friedman, not only Hayek, but even on a very practical level, like when Larry Sharp was running for governor here in New York, this was one of his things. He goes, let's make some progress. We're not going to get rid of government. Let's just make it better. Let's make it fairer. Let's make it smaller. And let's get some practical steps in that direction. And once people see it's plausible, then we could start making deeper cuts, you know, and make more systemic changes. And I think UBI falls in that category. The other thing I like about UBI, Hody, is you don't put conditions on how people live their lives. Like with a lot of these welfare programs, you have conditions. Famously, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, I think. If you get SNAP, you can't have soda. If you get SNAP, you can't have candy bars or whatever. And while I understand the logic behind someone claiming that, I'd rather not have the overhead. I don't want having, like, you know, Pepsi inspectors hit people's houses to make sure they're not drinking Pepsi, or paying a dollar of SNAP benefits to get 80 cents worth of, you know, a Pepsi from somebody that they just passed, you know, that they exchanged the SNAP dollars for actual dollars to buy what they want. Make life simpler, cut down, you know, in the pursuit of efficiency, at least get rid of that administrative overhead where you're trying to dictate to people how to live their lives. If you're going to help them, give them the UBI directly. I know some of you will be out there saying, what if they use it to buy drugs? What if they use it? Guess what? Any welfare you send them will be used for that purpose. If you don't agree with that lifestyle, I don't know what else to tell you. Then maybe you shouldn't be looking at a libertarian response, because you're not a libertarian if you're interested in how people, in dictating how people live their lives and regulating the choices they make. So that's another reason I like UBI. There's no strings attached. Like once you say, okay, you know, you're entitled to X, so you get to the poverty line, and guess what? There's no more coming back to the pay window. You got what you were allocated. There it is. Now you have to budget it. You have to, you know. I don't know. That's the way I see it, Hody. I mean, I know, again, it's not like the purely libertarian way, but I think if I could stake out a position and that lets me ride with Uncle Milty, I think I'm in pretty good shape. I'm willing to take
that. You're in great shape. Honestly, this is you and I were talking about steps towards libertarianism. Right. It's kind of what we do. We're not collapsitarians. Right. We don't want the system to collapse. Now, some of us may think it will, but based on what we've seen from collapsed societies, they don't tend to look really super freedom oriented and libertarian. Right. Like normally that's when people actually fall down to their basest instincts. Right. And like we start losing a lot of that. But I think you're actually making an excellent point here. This is a study that I remember seeing from the Cato Institute, is that people are more likely to embrace and make good choices with freedom when we give them the tools of freedom. So yes. One of the issues, they were looking at both UBI stuff as well as recidivism rates in our incarceration system. So when we have people that are in these criminal justice systems, when we lock them up and take away their freedoms and then let them go, are they more responsible or less responsible with their freedoms? Versus if we actually have a fully correctional system, and teach them how to better use their freedom. Hey, listen, we're going to practice being free real quick, and here's some things to learn about it. They're going to end up embracing that system more than if you just take that freedom away. This is the exact same thing that we saw that happened with people on these SNAP benefits. If you just give them, hey, you're allowed to have red beans and rice and nothing else, and, you know, water, right? That's all we're paying for. They will promote ideologies that make it so that there are more restrictions. Nobody should be eating anything but red beans and rice and drinking water. And they will demand that of more other people, and they won't aspire to greater freedoms in their own life. Versus if we give them a taste of freedom to be like, hey, here's $300, you can do anything with it. Yeah, they might blow it on crack month one. That's not going to work for them on month two, three, four, right? Like, this isn't going to keep working for them. So when they say, hey, listen, I'm now coming face to face with the consequences of my decisions and the market results of that, I'm actually going to make some better choices here. And this empowers them to make the better choices. So instead of saying, hey, you get no choices, and then hopefully when they make enough money, they make good choices, that's not how it works for anybody. What we need to do is show them how to, like, hey, listen, here's a system that'll help you make some good decisions on your own. And when you're out of that system, you're going to have learned how to make good decisions on your own. And so when we limit, you know, when we want to, like, crush prisoners or the poor, which are the two people we're talking about here, we are shooting ourselves in the foot. There is a reason the U.S. system makes more poor the more we do and makes more prisoners the more we do. We have the highest incarcerated rate of adults on planet Earth by magnitudes, right? By magnitudes. And we do not have the most dissident population on Earth. That's just not true. We just have a system that fails people. And so we really need to fix this at a mental and cultural level, as opposed to trying to fix this in a regulatory level. And so I got to say, maybe I'm giving up my anarchist stripes too, but Big John, I think you're spot on this. I think it's a step towards freedom, and I would much rather have that than a step towards government control, but at least I don't have to pay as much for it.
Right. I agree with you. And again, to the heart of what you just said is, again, I'm reminded of Milton Friedman when he said, you know, at the heart of most objections to liberty is the fear that liberty won't work. And it's a mistrust of liberty. And when you say, I don't trust people to make their own decisions, you know, that says a lot about you. Even if you have all the good intentions in the world, I don't trust so-and-so to make their own decision because I'm afraid they'll harm themselves. Okay, I understand you have good intentions with that. Why not work to educate that person? Why not work to help that person? You know, we talk about accountability, and unless you're a Randian, you might feel that you have an obligation to your fellow humans around you. If not financially, perhaps you do in terms of culture. Perhaps you do in terms of, you know, well-adjusted people who are in love with liberty, who will help others achieve this as much as they can. Hey, that's something that rises all the boats. You know, it's the same concept that you use, like, for stock markets and for currency markets. You know, if you're a trader, you're like, hey, the pie is endless. It's not a fixed pie. You're right. It's not a fixed pie. I get it. Why do you not apply that principle, though, to human achievement and help people reach those higher levels? Why are they limited? Some of us are. So I'm not as smart as you are, Hody. I'm limited in that sense. But the truth of the matter is, you could try to maximize my output. I could try to maximize your output. We help each other in that sense. And that's what we're trying to do. I think that UBI doesn't accomplish all of that in one fell swoop. But it's certainly better than the humiliation ritual. And let's face it, that's what a lot of these welfare programs are initially. They're humiliation rituals in order for you to receive the public benefit that we think you deserve. Well, you have to go through some humiliation. You have to come stand online. You've got to recount to us how you tried to find work but didn't. And, you know, and if you never thought of them as humiliation rituals, go through them once. Like, how do you feel when you go to the DMV and you're there for 12 hours to fill out a 5-minute form, right? You feel humiliated, right? Like, why did I have to go through this? Couldn't this have been done online or something, right?
There's 18 booths. Only one of them's occupied, right? You're waiting for 3 hours.
Right, right. 3 hours. You must live somewhere in the boonies. Here in New York City, it's like, if you're lucky, you get done in 12 hours. So, I'm not exaggerating. You
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. But, and again, that's fine. It's New York City. That's what happens when you pack 9 million people in a very small area, right? But my point is, we go through it for a driver's license.
Yeah.
And we're making people go through it for their sustenance, for their existence, basically. And I'm not a bleeding heart by any stretch of the imagination, but like when you stop and analyze it, how do you expect people to succeed if you don't give them the ability to succeed? If you set them up for success, at least some will succeed. If you constantly set them up for failure, none of them will succeed. And I think that's what we have to recognize. So I'm getting off my preachy soapbox here, Hody.
But I think beautifully put, because I think anybody who's had to recover from addiction knows about the shame cycle. Feeling bad keeps you doing it, right? We know that creates a cycle when you feel ashamed of your habit, addiction, of whatever it is. And it's identified very early in a therapeutic recovery process to be like, we need to stop just making you feel bad, because that's going to just drive you deeper into this hole. That's not a valid way to recover. So we, you know, when we do these prison systems or, you know, recovery systems or SNAP systems, and we humiliate these people, we're actually getting them stuck in that cycle, right? We're ensuring that system keeps going. So it's really important to address this, because Big John, what you're talking about, we talk about numbers and stuff on the show a lot, right? We talk about tariffs and immigrants, right, and quantities and stuff, but this is deeply psychological, and human beings, none of us are above psychology. We're all ruled by it. We're all ruled by that neurology. So it's really important, because we can't systemically fix it until we address those psychological issues. So I love that you bring that up. I think it's a fantastic point. As my co-host, I guess I'll give you a couple of props there. I know I know sometimes, you know, you say you're dumber than me, and maybe a little bit of that's true, right? But in this case,
I generally strive to be the dumbest person in any given room. It's actually been sort of like a premise of mine throughout my whole life and career. You know, it's just but anyway. You know what, Hody?
You're just the humble guy in the room, Big John. That's all there is.
Well, thank you. But all right. So we did have one more topic on tap, but I think we're going to pass on that, because I like the way this show came together, talking mainly about economic issues and the cryptos and everything. Hopefully, everyone out there, thank you very much for joining us for Free For All. If you have any questions at all, or you could always hit me up on Twitter. I am at BigJohn_SXM. For some reason, I forgot to put up the names this time, but I will do so next time. And you can reach Hody, go to X on at TheHodeMan, and you can hit us up. We answer most the DMs that are sent our way, especially if they're not particularly vile. We'll give them a shot. And Hody, hit us up with what you're doing when you're not on Free For All.
Sure, fantastic. Well, Aaron, who is listening right here, I actually just came from his book club, and he was very kind to follow me over here. So that's
By the way, your friend had this to say.
Oh, shoot. I doxed him. My bad. Well, I'm about to do it again, Aaron, because if you search for Aaron Goss on either, I believe it's mostly Facebook. I think he might be on Twitter. I could be wrong about that. But say on Facebook, Aaron Goss, he runs a book club. Now, in this book club, we actually read the book during the club. So it's one of those that's a great book club if you want to learn a lot more. We're reading Noam Chomsky's Manufacturing Consent right now. Mind-blowing stuff. But it's great for people that are really busy, and they just frequently – I mean, how many of us get in these book clubs and we don't read the book, right? We're like, no worries here. You just show up. The book gets read. We comment during. It's a really good situation. So it's on his Discord server. So if you want to talk to Aaron Goss about that, AARON GOSS. There you go. I doxed him completely and officially now. Find him on Facebook. He's got a good group for that. I'm with the Love for Christians. Of course, we have Wednesday night Bible studies. We do daily readings of the Bible. It's a great place. We have non-believers, believers, prospective believers, people who have been believers for 20 years, some people in the clergy, people that know Greek, people that know Hebrew, and then some people like me who are just trying to hold it all together. It's a really great place for people to meet, to be. If you have people that have questions, if you have a question that you just say, man, I'm embarrassed to ask, but I'm just not getting a satisfactory answer from these other places, you know, maybe I can ask you guys. We'd love to hear from you. It's the Love First Christians. Again, find me, Hody Johns on Twitter, Hody Johns on Facebook, at the Hode Man on Twitter, I guess. Discord, I will give you a Discord invite. It's all over my videos. It's not hard to find. But we'd be blessed to have you, even if you only tend to check in like once a year, once a decade, or maybe just once real quick. We're just happy to be there for you. We're doing some really good things. We're actually getting some really good work going on beyond just discussions. And if you want to be a part of that, now's the ideal time. And then on Thursday evenings, I'm on the Free for All with Big John. You can find us at, I believe it's 10 o'clock. Is that when it starts, Eastern? I'm not 10 Eastern, right? Cool. 10 o'clock Eastern, where you find us. We talk about all kinds of fun stuff. It's truly a free for all. If you want to disrupt the flow and you want to say, I want them to talk about this, leave it in the comments and we will probably end up talking about it.
Yeah. It doesn't take much to goad us into a conversation. So, all right, everyone. Once again, thank you for joining us here on Free for All. Remember, you can find us on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find Grumblings Media. That's our handle on all the social media platforms. So just look for that there. And I will throw a plug out once again for my other friend and co-host, Mr. Mike Termod on Liberty Lens. Catch that every Thursday morning where it drops, again, right here at grumblingsmedia.com. Until next week, everyone, peace.